It's time for Fairbanks Foodies, a look at everything food-related in Fairbanks. Fairbanks Foodies is brought to you by Hoodoo Brewery, Bobby's Downtown, Quality Food Sales, and the Fairbanks Community Food Bank. Now here's your foodie host, David Proust.
Good evening, Fairbanks. Welcome to our locally produced show, Fairbanks Foodies. I'm your host, David Proust. On this show, we explore meals you can prepare, restaurants you should try, events you can participate in, beverages you can create, and basically, the fun you can have with food in your home, at your friend's house, out here in Fairbanks. We have wonderful sponsors of our show, and I hope that you use all of them. They treat us so very fine on this show. This month, we're going to be focusing on cast iron. So first, let's look at what cast iron is. Cast iron is an alloy of iron that contains 2 to 4% carbon, along with varying amounts of silicone and manganese, that's a big word for me, and traces of impurities such as sulfur and phosphorus. It's made by reducing iron ore in a blast furnace. The liquid iron is cast or poured and hardened into crude ingots called pigs. Hey, that's cool. And the pigs are subsequently remelted along with scrap and alloying elements in cupola furnaces and recast in the molds for producing a variety of products. A little bit of the history of cast iron, because the Chinese produced cast iron as early as the 6th century and was produced periodically in Europe by the 14th century. It was introduced in England in about 1500, and the first ironworks in America were established on the James River in Virginia in 1619. During the 18th and 19th centuries, cast iron was a cheaper engineering material than wrought iron because it did not require intensive refining and working with hammers, but is more brittle and inferior in textile strength. Nevertheless, it's a load-bearing strength that made it first important structural metal and is used in some of the earliest skyscrapers. In the 20th century, steel replaced cast iron in construction, but cast iron continues in many industries. So, we get into cooking cast iron. Now, let's take a look at your cast iron cooking implements. You can go over to Fred Meyer's. You can go over to the Sportsman's Warehouse, and they have a plethora of cast iron cooking implements that you can buy there. Depending what you want to do. The 12-inch cast iron, the traditional one's about $34, $35. You can get 3.5 to 5 quart cast iron cooking pots that are good. So it's cast iron is a great way to cook for a couple reasons. One is it maintains a great heat. Once you get it to a specific heat, it maintains that with minimal power needed. You can cook with it over the fire. You can cook with it on your stovetop. You can stick it in your smoker. You can stick it in your oven. And what I'm going to show you later on in the show is techniques where you start on the skillet, on the oven top, then you put it back into your oven. So that's how you do it. Now, when you go get a brand new cast iron skillet, you have to break it in. You have to make it so it's ready to go. And a couple ways to do it, but what I like to do, I like to go down to the store and get a little container of Crisco oil. That's right, the Crisco. And what you do is you're going to take a sheet pan, and you're going to use that to put your cast iron skillet on, and you're going to take the Crisco. And you're going to rub it in a good amount on both the inside and the outside and the handle, the whole thing, the whole thing. Then you're going to set your oven at 400 degrees, put it on top, put the 12-inch skillet or whatever you have face side down on top of the sheet pan, put it in the oven at 400 degrees for 40 minutes to an hour. I always go an hour. Then at the end of the hour, I shut off the oven, let it rest for an hour, put on some nice hand warmers, and pull the skillet out, cast iron cooking implement, whatever it is, and bam, you're ready to go. That's how you break in a skillet. Now, cleaning a skillet. If you do it this way, you can use soap in your skillet, believe it or not. You just can't use a Bristol metal rub or anything like that, but you can use soap. Another way to clean your skillet is to wash it out with water, dry it as much as you can with a paper towel, and then use a coarse salt and scrub it with the coarse salt. You know, with a good paper towel, you're not trying to rip everything off. But what happens is your food implements get then transferred onto the salt. And then you can take the salt, throw it out, put more salt in there for a really fine finish and clean. But that's another way to clean it. You don't want to use scrub pads on it or anything like that. You don't want to break that barrier you put on when you did your original getting it ready in the oven with your Crisco oil. So many ways to do it. And then when you're done cleaning it, take a paper towel, rub it as much as you can, then put a little bit of oil on that paper towel, a new paper towel, and on the inside of your cooking area, on your cast iron skillet, put a little coat of oil on there. That way it's not going to rust up or do anything like that. It keeps a nice sheen on it. And that's how you maintain a cooking skillet. So there's so many things and so many ways you can cook with a skillet. And this last weekend, playoffs, I cooked an incredible steak. But there's many ways to cook a steak. There's many steaks. And so what I thought I'd do, I'd bring you through cooking two steaks. The first is going to be the New York steak, and then I'll give you, hints on how to do it on a stovetop skillet. Then I'm going to bring you through doing a tenderloin. They start out on the stovetop, then you put it in the oven. So, you know, again, you have to bring, when you're cooking a steak, you want to bring the sear out. Flavor is the king, and a crispy brown sear is essential for recreating that coveted steakhouse experience in your own home. You want to get that sear. You want to get that crisp on there. And you can do it by mastering steak right on the right on your stovetop. This quick and easy method requires three things: your heavy cast iron skillet, a sturdy pair of kitchen thongs. You know, get the 6 to 8 inch ones because you're going to want to have a little bit of distance between you and the heat, and a meat thermometer. And while the cooking times vary based on your preferred level of doneness and size of the meat cut, this method can be applied to basically any of the steaks. So first, for the deepest seasoning and browning, season your steaks generously with kosher salt well before cooking, letting the salted meat rest overnight in the refrigerator, unsealed, gives the best results. But if you can't plan that far in advance, season it for an hour or two just before cooking and letting it rest outside, letting it come to room temperature. When it's time to cook, a hot skillet is key. High heat drives away surface moisture from the steaks, giving you a deeply brown and crispy crust. Cast iron skillet will retain the heat and not warp from extended use over the high temperatures. Brush lightly with canola or vegetable oil and heat until whiffs of smoke rise from the surface. You want to get it hot. You want to see that smoke coming up. Place the steak in the center of the pan and sear it well on the top, bottom, and edges using thongs. Turn over the meat as each side browns. And if cooking multiple steaks, do not crowd the pan because doing so will cause your temperature to drop and sabotage your sear. Cooking a thinner steak, rare to medium rare, calls for a quick sear. For thicker cuts or for more done temperatures, finish steak by popping it, still in the skillet, into a preheated oven at 400 degrees. Then figure out what your internal temperature you want it to be. And remember, when you pull it off and you tent it, your temperature is still going to climb up for the next 5 to 8 minutes and from about 3 to 6 degrees. So I like my steak at about 132 to 135. That's a perfect medium rare. There's multiple techniques for estimating dentists, but the only reliable gauge involves a meat thermometer. So get the digital version, easy to find, easy to buy. When the steak is nearly done, drop a knob of butter and a few dashes of Worcestershire sauce. If, like myself, I love Worcestershire sauce in this pan and start basting the meat continuously. What I like to do is I like to take the handle of the cast iron skillet, put it at 12 degrees, lift it up a couple inches. It brings all your liquids down to the bottom and right in front of you, and then I take the spoon and spoon it on top. Before digging in, let the meat rest for 5 to 10 minutes, depending on its size. This allows the juices to redistribute and prevents them from flowing out when the meat is cut. To serve, you're ready to go. Sprinkle with coarse salt, fresh ground pepper, and there you go. That's how you do it. Now, that's one way to do it. That's one way to do it. There's many other types. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give you a menu that I found for strip steaks with green peppercorn sauce. And this is what you're going to need. You're going to need 4 1-inch thick strip steaks, New York's, some kosher salt, two teaspoons of extra virgin olive oil, 2 shallots finely chopped, 1.5 cups of ruby port. That's the 5-year-old port. And again, after that, you get to sip the rest of the ruby port while you cook. You'll need 2 cups of beef stock, 1 cup of heavy cream. Now, here's the thing that you might have problem finding: 1/4 cup of brine cured green peppercorns, rinsed and coarsely chopped. Get online and find that if you can't find it in Fairbanks. Then 2 teaspoons of white wine vinegar. So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to season our steaks generously. Place on a plate, cover, and refrigerate for 2 hours. Remove the steaks from the refrigerator and set aside at room temperature for 1 hour. Preheat the oven to 200 degrees. Use a paper towel and pat the steaks dry to a large cast iron skillet set over a medium-high heat. Add 1 tablespoon of the oil. When it's hot and simmering, add 2 steaks to the skillet and cook, turning once until well-browned, 2 to 3 minutes per side for medium-rare. Transfer the steaks to a heat-proof platter. Tent with foil and transfer to the oven. Repeat the process to the other 2 remaining steaks. So you're using your oven here as a holding temperature, which is very good. Once your skillet is empty, add the remaining oil, turn the heat to medium, add the shallots, and cook, stirring continuously until fragrant, about a minute. Add the port, turn the heat to medium high, and again, it's going to react fast. Add the port, and you're going to bring it to a boil, and you're going to reduce the sauce to about 1/4 cup, which is about 5 to 6 minutes. Then you're going to pour the beef stock, and you're going to boil until syrupy, which is in about another 10 minutes. Turn to medium heat, add the cream, cook until thickened, about 8 minutes, stir in the peppercorns, vinegar, and salt to taste. So it's about a 30-minute process to make that good sauce. Then you're going to take the platters of steaks out of the oven, discard the foil, pour the sauce over the steaks, and serve. And there you go. That's how you get a very good peppercorn steak. There's so many different ways to do it, but you're using your cast iron skillet, and then you're using your oven as a holding temperature, and there you go. And with that, Fairbanks, we are going to hear from our wonderful sponsors back after these messages.
Hoodoo Brewery. Sure, you grab a cold one after work with your friends and coworkers in the amazing beer garden. Or maybe fill up the growler on the way home. Hoodoo Brewery. Some of the finest beer in all of Alaska, right here in Fairbanks, right in the heart of downtown. Now you can order your beer online at hoodoobrew.com or sign up for a tour of the brewery. Score some cool Hoodoo swag and support your local beer meisters. That's Hoodoo Brewery, a strong supporter of Fairbanks and local events, large and small. Hoodoo is always there with a cold one just for you. Hoodoo Brewery.
At Bobby's Downtown, we are more than a Greek restaurant that offers fine dining. It's our way of life. And we invite you to come in for lunch, dinner, and late night. We are proud to call Fairbanks home, and we love using locally sourced ingredients in our traditional Greek and American dishes. So come in from the cold and warm up at the bar with a heated handrail and enjoy a glass of wine from the always expanding wine selection. We hope to see you soon at the always non-smoking Bobby's Downtown on the corner of 2nd and Barnett.
It's great to be able to enjoy our favorite local restaurants once again. And you can thank the folks at Quality Sales Food Service. Even during the toughest of times, they were making sure local eateries had the food and supplies needed to keep their businesses open. Quality Sales Food Service, Interior Alaska's number one food supplier, teaming up with Gold Bond Marketing, have allowed them to buy in volume and keep prices low, which helps keep your dinner costs low as well. That's Quality Sales Food Service, the food suppliers for your favorite restaurants. Online at qualitysales.net.
Do you have a little or even a lot of time to share? You can help with the Fairbanks Community Food Bank. Call 45-SHARE and get on the schedule. The Fairbanks Community Food Bank collects and redistributes food through many programs, including food boxes, bone builders, and agency shopping. The Fairbanks Community Food Bank, helping to ensure that no child in the Tanana Valley will go hungry. Call 45-SHARE to volunteer to help now at the Fairbanks Community Food Bank, providing food for hungry people without charge. This message brought to you by the radio station at 529 Fifth Avenue.
And now, back to Fairbanks Foodies on KFAR Radio.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I hope you're enjoying this treat. Last week, I told you about three steaks out at the Greens restaurant, the tenderloin, the New York, and the ribeye. Today, cast iron-wise, we just did the New York steak, and we're going to do the tenderloin. Now, this last Sunday, for football, went over to a buddy's house, and Rob and myself and Doug, and I cooked them, you know, the brunch breakfast that we served at 12:30, halftime of the first game. And what I did was I used two cast iron skillets, and I cooked two items in that. And one of them was the beef tenderloin steak, and one of them was potatoes. Now, let's go through the potatoes first. This is going to be basically a 35 to 40 minute process. What I did is I got three red potatoes, and I, you know, cut them up into half inch chunks each. And then I heated up the first skillet. I set the oven temperature at 350 degrees. And cut up the first ones, and I put the canola oil into the first skillet, and I got that going, and then I put in the red potatoes, and I put in Lowry seasoning, salt, pepper, and some granulated garlic. That is it. And what I did was, it took me about 5 to 8 minutes, but I seared them. You know, got a good little coloration on the potatoes. And then I put them in the oven, and there's a 30-minute process in the oven. Once I put them in the oven, okay, I had 30 minutes. And then what I did is I got my wonderful beef tenderloin out, and I had about a 4 to 5 inch piece of it from Tommy G's. Incredible piece of meat. And what I did was I put olive oil on it, and that was my binder for the cracked salt and cracked pepper on it. And that was it. That's all I put on there. And then what I did was I put canola oil in the pan, and I got it going to where I could see the smoke, and I started the searing process. Now, when you're cooking a beef tenderloin, it looks like almost like a, you know, a triangular in shape. So what I did was on each side to get that sear, and I had it on medium-high heat, I seared it for 3 minutes, then I moved it inside onto a new place in the cast iron skillet to sear it after 3 minutes. And at the same time, I put in a half a stick of butter and some shallots that I cut up and some wonderful garlic, and I was sauteing that up. And the reason why I did that was because after I seared the tenderloin on 3 minutes per side, the three sides, and then about a minute to two on each edge, I built what I called a nest. And I had garlic, onion, then I put in fresh thyme, sage, and oregano on top of the onions and the garlic. And then I rested my seared steak on top of that. Then I put it in the oven along with the potatoes, and I put it in there at 350, and I had it in there for 14 minutes. So by this time, the potatoes have been in there for about 20, 22 minutes. At the time, after 14 minutes, I pulled out the steak, took and put it on a platter. I took out the remaining half cube of butter, and taking the skillet, pointing the handle at 12 o'clock, putting in butter, melting the butter into, along with my ingredients of the herbs, the garlic, and my onion there, got it all going. Then I got a nice mixture going. And when the butter started churning up, it's ready to go. So I put the tenderloin back on the skillet, lifted it up about 3 inches, and I started pouring with a spoon the buttery content onto the steak. And I did that for about 2.5 minutes. When I was done, shut off the grill, shut off the range, took the steak, put it back onto my cutting board, foiled it with a tent of aluminum foil, and I let it rest for 12 minutes. And what I always do is if I cook this for 12 to 14 minutes, I should let it rest for 12 to 14 minutes. That's my rule of thumb on a very, very, very good steak like that. Now, why do we let it rest? Because what you do is you let it rest so it allows the juices to redistribute. And then when you cut into it, it doesn't flow out. The juices don't flow out of the steak. You know, you're not getting that, what we call the blood on the plate. So that's why we do it. So then at the 30-minute mark, after when the steak was done being rested, I pulled out my second skillet that had my red potatoes in it, and I started plating 3 plates. You know, you're using a lot of hand warmers because your skillets are heated up, and you're using a lot of mats to put it so you're not burning your countertops. Plated the potatoes. They're perfectly done. Crisp on the outside, nice heated through, soft on the inside. I cut the meat, perfect medium rare, as I called it. If you look at my Facebook, you can see what that looks like. It was just wonderful. Cut it into 1.5-inch thick pieces, and boy, I also did some poached eggs. 3 things, eggs, steak, and potatoes. Poached eggs, beef tenderloin, red potatoes, 2 things cooked in the skillet, 1 in a poacher that I have. And it was wonderful. That's how you cook a beautiful steak and eggs if you want, or that's how you cook the tenderloin. Then if you want to make a sauce for the tenderloin, you don't make a sauce for a tenderloin for a breakfast steak, but you might in an evening steak, something like that, you could do it. So again, we just got done cooking 2 different steaks with a skillet, 2 different ways. One was the skillet itself, and the other one was you have the top that you're frying it on and the oven that you're baking it on. Now, anyway, then I made something else last week, and I got to do this a couple times a year. I'm Italian. And clam linguine. Many people in Fairbanks say, David, where do I get clams at? Well, first thing is, if you go over to Safeway, they get a fresh set of clams and mussels every Thursday and Saturday. So that's where I got my clams. Now, for good clam linguine, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need 1 pound of linguine. I always use the DeSico brand. You can get that at Safeway or Fred Meyer's. Then you're going to get your chopped onion, your chopped garlic. Now, also, this is what I like to do. I like to go to Safeway because they will, for about $3, you can buy a nice container of a lot of garlic bulbs. You know, they've been taken out of their natural garlic aspect there. And you can also get chopped red or white, yellow onion. Makes it really easy and simple. Then you're going to need a half a bottle of Pinot Grigio, 2 to 2.5 pounds of steamer clams. I use 2.25 pounds. And it's a two-part cooking process. You're going to get your stock pot and you're going to boil the water for your linguine. When it comes to a boil, that's when you put your salt in it. Don't do it before. Do it after. Cover it. Let it come back to the boil. Then you put your linguine in there. When you put your linguine in there, go to your other, like a cast iron skillet that I used, and I put in my butter. I put in shallots, onion, garlic, and I get that going, and I get that sautéing up. And then after about 3 to 5 minutes, I put in my half bottle of Pinot Grigio. And just about 2 minutes before I'm going to put my linguine in, that's when I put in my herbs, because I don't want the herbs to get too browned or burnt. I just want that fragrance in there. And I add some fresh chopped sage and some fresh chopped oregano, and I put it in there. And you're going to cook your linguine to al dente, a little bit stiff, because you're going to finish cooking it in your sauce that you have with your Pinot Grigio, your butter, your garlic, and everything. So you take your linguine, drain it, then you put it in the skillet. And it's going to take about 4 to 5 minutes for the linguine to absorb and come to a nice texture. And when that's done, then you put your steamer clams in and you put the top on it. And 2 to 3 minutes later, all your clams have opened up, your linguine's there, and then you finish it off by getting some fresh Italian flat-leaf parsley, dice it up all real nicely and neat, and that's how you enjoy it. That's how you enjoy it. This service, if you're serving other things, I use that for a party of 6 people at my house, if you're serving other items, or that's good for 3 people if it's only clam linguine. That'll give everyone about 1/3 of a pound of pasta, plus about a good amount of steamer clams there. It's a great meal. It's a wonderful way to do it. And once in a while, you just need a good steamer clam, and this is a good way to have steamer clams. So that's our cooking process. Now, there's something else you might want to do. The cabin, it's a new cocktail lounge there on the old Steese. They're having a nice martini night on Monday. It goes from 6 to 9 p.m. They'll serve you 5 types of martinis. So I'm not a martini person, but I've been in there. It's a very nice facility. You should go try it. I'm going to be there. And if I see you there and you want to talk how to make the best clam linguine in the world, I'll give you the recipe there too. Fairbanks, that is our show for tonight. You have a great day. Hope you enjoyed the show. And next week, we'll be doing more cast iron cooking. I'll see you then.
You have been listening to Fairbanks Foodies on 97.5 FM KFAR and 660 AM. Also streaming live at KFARradio.com. To listen to this or any past episodes, go to the archive page on the website. Fairbanks Foodies has been brought to you by Bobby's Downtown, Quality Food Sales, Hoodoo Brewery, and the Fairbanks Community Food Bank. Fairbanks Foodies has been a production of Last Frontier Media Active for KFAR Radio.